Thank you. Welcome. Today is 2nd of November, 2010. I'm very pleased to see so many people here. I didn't expect, with the weather being as inclement as it is today, to see so many bright souls shining here in front of me. So, thanks for coming. Always our pleasure. So, Jupiter has been in Pisces since 2nd of May and will remain in Pisces until 8th of May, 2011, except for about a month, when he goes retrograde motion backwards into Aquarius, which happened yesterday. So Jupiter will remain in Aquarius for 1 month only, Colette, and that is from 1st of November till 6th of December, so a little bit more than a month. If you have any planets in Aquarius in your Vedic birth chart, if you have your ascendant or any other planets in Aquarius, then those planets will be benefited, or those houses, whichever house that might be in, will be benefited at this time for the coming month. And then December 6th, Jupiter will move back into Pisces, into his own sign again, until May of next year. So just for a month, he's shifted. Let's just have a quick glance at the month of November in terms of the planetary planner. For those of you that are listening to this over the internet, you can find this on the website on the front page. Down on the right, it says monthly planetary planner. You click on that, you find your region or some area of the world that is close to you, and you click on that for the month of November, and then you'll find the reference for your particular time zone. So we have a couple of gold days coming up here on Thursday the 4th and Friday the 5th and Saturday the 6th. Now I'm talking about Irish time zone and the British time zone, which is the same. So we have gold. The gold doesn't start until 8:27 on Thursday evening. So really you've got Friday and Saturday. So if there's anything really important you want to do or to launch or to begin or to sign, Friday, Saturday would be excellent days in which to do that. It'll be moon with Venus. If you're doing anything creatively, wonderful time. When are you starting over there?
Going tomorrow.
You're going tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay. So you got a couple gold days. Then we go to double gray. The moon will be debilitated in Scorpio with Mars. That's not the easiest time, and it'll also be the new moon when moon is a little bit weaker. So you got a few days of that from the 6th to the 8th. No, it keeps going, because then moon is with Rahu, and then it's just gray. We have some more gold days coming up on the 13th, Saturday, late in the evening, but really the 14th and 15th, Sunday and Monday, are gold days. And then you have some silver days later on, 21st, 22nd, 23rd, we have some silver days. And that also is the full moon, 21st. And then we have some more silver on 25th, 26th, 27th. So it's quite a few nice days this month. Be careful on the double gray.
So what we should do then?
Double gray? Chant. Chant your mantras. Well, yeah, whichever ones you like. Whichever ones you... What do I recommend? If you want to achieve spiritual benefit, then chant the Hare Krishna mantra. If you want to remove some obstacles, you could chant the Ganesh. Or the one we're going to get tonight, because this one tonight is... this is if you want to achieve the impossible. That's the one I'm giving you tonight. Not bad, eh? Okay, so we want to share an event, a story that happened with one of our clients. This person is a lady. She's married to a lord in Ireland, but this is a lord and a lady, which I don't think they're that common in Ireland. If I told you the estate they owned, you'd know immediately, because this estate is known throughout the world. It's a household name. These people are going through a divorce that's been carried on now for 7 years. So it's contentious. And I've been counseling her for not quite that length of time, almost astrologically, maybe for about 4, 5, 6 years, something like that. So she has an apartment at the moment in the city. And Kalindi and I went over there, I don't know, about a month ago to check the vastu of the place. The intention was to improve the vastu in whatever way we could. The spatial balance, spatial rectification, and bringing in the good vibrations. Vastu is sacred Vedic architecture and space, you know, how to arrange your space. So it's like feng shui, but it's predates feng shui. So we went there also with the intention of improving the vastu for the sake of her being able to succeed in her court case, which is probably going to be dragged on and on. You know how they do these things. It's part of it's the tactic to drag it on. So anyway, that was fine. We did that. And then the lady came here for a consultation. I don't know how much later. A few weeks later. Something like that. So in the middle of the night, maybe 4 a.m., I think she said, there's a knock on the door. She's upstairs sleeping.
That's more like a bang on the door.
Well, it was a knock, and then it became a bang on the door, and she was upstairs sleeping. And then her son came down, correct?
He thought it was, someone drunk or something like that.
Like, yeah.
Getting out of bed, because it was like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, maybe somebody wants to use the phone or something, you know. The bar got out or something. And she was reluctant to answer the door. Don't blame her. But then the banging became very intense, and it wouldn't go away. So they peeked out the window, and the police were there, and the police were banging on the door. So they opened the door. And
the son left out the front window and he said, "Mom, your car is running."
That's it.
On the street outside.
Your car is running.
Huh?
Lights are on, car is running.
And then he looked down and he could see the police at the front
door. Then the police were at the door. They opened the door. And the police said, we just caught this burglar who's just robbed your place, stolen your car keys, turned on your car, yeah, while she was asleep and while her son was asleep, started the car. He had stolen 3 or 4 computers.
Plasma TVs.
Wow.
You know, it's one of the old sort of Georgian had, you know, had gone in downstairs.
So he had it all nicely organized and packed into the back of the Jeep. It's all, you know, very organized. And he started up the Jeep ready to pull away. And the cops happened to turn the corner and start driving down the street. So he immediately, the thief, assumed that she called the police. But she knew nothing about the fact that she had been robbed. And as soon as he saw the police in the rearview mirror, he jumped out of the car and started running full speed down the street. And the cops went and apprehended him. So it's kind of an interesting story, because we had just busted the place, and we had said she was in, there was some astrological influence, just to be careful of not losing things or things being stolen. But it was minor, wasn't major. But so here she had been robbed, but not. So, yeah.
She got over the karma where they have.
Yeah. So she suffered the karma without suffering the karma.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's the way.
So how did she make changes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that happened to me one time where somebody had compromised my credit card, and I was living in Ireland at the time, and this was back in Washington State, where I had been living, and. And the guy ran up $3,000 worth of charges. But I had the insurance on the credit card, so I lost the money, but didn't lose the money. Got it all back. So that's the way to, you see, you're still playing out the karma, but without the loss, you know, the full impact.
The karma as well, it's probably locked up somewhere.
Oh yeah, he was locked up. Yeah, it was funny at the time. It was the moving company that was to ship my stuff by sea from America to Ireland, and I said to the lady in the office in Washington, I said. I think somebody there has compromised my credit card that works in your office. Oh, no, that's not possible. Why isn't it possible? Because it's only me and John. Okay. And I says, does John have a brand new set of tires and wheels? She says, let me go look. And she gets up, she looks out the window of the office to the car park and says, yeah, he does, as a matter of fact. I says, well, compliments of me. So, we got John. John was God. Okay, so, we had a nice one today, a small one. Kalindi and I were driving to the bank. And in yoga philosophy, in Vedic spirituality, they often talk about nivritti and pravritti. Nivritti is the path of renunciation, where you leave the world, you retreat, you withdraw from the world. And you go, and either you live in an ashram, or you live in a cave, or you live under a tree. You live away from society. And this is a path of renunciation. So we stay away from all this. in order to focus on God and sadhana, spiritual practice. And it's much easier, theoretically, to do that than it is to stay in the midst of all this, where everybody's intention is anything but that, and all the temptations we're surrounded by in a modern city, no matter where you are on the globe. And but if you don't retreat, then, and you stay in the city, and you practice your, well, the city, in society, and you practice your spirituality, and you do it also perhaps for the benefit of others, not just yourself, then that is pravritti. And that is more of a proactive method. But it's much more difficult because of the temptations and the allurements of the modern world. And one can fall into the snares of Maya or illusion fairly easily. It is the same or the story of Krishna and Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna was asked to fight this battle based on religious principle or moral principle. It was a battle based on dharma to return the kingdom to the Pandavas that had been usurped by their cousins, the Kauravas. And Arjuna had a struggle in his mind about having to fight this battle, but he was a warrior by nature. He was a prince, and it was his duty to fight the battle. But it was a difficult decision for him to make. So Krishna had to explain to him the science of yoga, and in the process convince him what his duty, his dharma, actually was. And that was to do what was required, do the needful, do what was necessary in that circumstance, which was to fight. So, you know, and then Clindy and I were talking about that and living in the world and not retiring from the world and dealing with what we have to deal with and taking a similar path, although we're not fighting a battle, quote unquote, but we fight a battle every day. We all do on some level. And just as I said that, on the side of a building as we drove by was written, "Fight Back." Somebody had painted it on in big white letters, "Fight Back." And I said, "Yes, well, there it is. Fight back." So any stories, any interesting experiences, hand of God in your life?
There was one kind of really interesting. I saw a program on Alexander the Great, and there's a temple that he traveled into when he was around. It was about 300 miles from Cairo, into the desert. And so we were chatting at the dinner table and said, "If we go to Egypt," I said, "right, if we go to Cairo and we see the pyramids, I want to go to this particular place." And we'll get a caravan out and we'll go away there for a couple of days. And so later on we moved from that place to another bar, and on the menu I had a drink called Alexander the Great. So I was like, okay, that was cool. So
I wouldn't have that.
So we went to another bar, and so I was chatting to this lady there, and her name was Sihad. And I said, "Where are you from?" She said she was from Morocco, because we were going to go to Morocco at the same time and then go over and climb the Atlas Mountains and then go around. And she says, "Where's that interesting name? Where's that name from?" She goes, "It's from Egypt." So I was like, okay, so everything is just going over there. Yeah. So I said, "Right, I'm going to Egypt."
Yeah, you're getting the sign. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Any nice stories you want to share with us?
It rained today when I was going for a walk, and I asked the road to stop. And it did.
Well, her and the sun.
Because initially I was the only one in the West Pier, and I thought nobody else here.
Should we send it a flood? Hit areas.
Okay.
Mantras and stuff, because when I'm doing the animal healing, I'm always chanting mantras. And
oh, good.
Depending on what's happening. But I'll also call in guides and stuff, you know, spirit guides and the Indian doctors and different things. And it's amazing. Like, I feel the energy come through, but it's amazing how quickly it works.
Which Indian doctors?
The twins. Yeah.
Ashwini Kumaras.
Yeah, and they come in quite often. And it's amazing. Like, it's just, you just chant. And yeah, you've
heard the chant
for long and you're there. You know, you've got it. It's great. It works so well.
We were reading about them not long ago. There's two celestials or divine beings, like demigods, beyond humans, but not in the spiritual world, the higher planets in the material world. And they're brothers, and they're called the Ashwini Kumaras. Kumar just means young. And they're twins. Yeah, one's got a mole where? One's got a mole on the left side, and the other one's got a mole on the right side. And that's the only way to tell them apart, because they're identical. And they're physicians. And they're also horse people. So if you have a planet... there's a constellation, a lunar constellation called Ashwini. It is the first constellation, the first nakshatra. And it is a deva nakshatra, higher vibration. And then if you have some planet in this position, you could become a horse whisperer. Or you would have a communion or communication with horses. They would listen to you. That's one of the strong indications for such a thing. Okay, so today we're going to read about my friend Krishna and his pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill when he was here 5,000 years ago. The reason we're going to read that is because Saturday is the day to celebrate, this coming Saturday, of Krishna's superhuman pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill. So there's Krishna in the middle there on the altar with Radha, and Krishna is God, manifestation of Vishnu, or Vishnu is a manifestation of Krishna. And Krishna appeared on the planet 5,000 years ago in India. And the reason avatars appear is why? Essentially for two reasons avatars come. Avatar means one who descends, comes down. Why do they come? To annihilate or neutralize the demons or the people creating problems, and to protect and inspire the devotees. So the suras and the asuras. The asuras are demons or atheists or criminals or troublemakers or corrupt politicians, corrupt kings, anybody who's preying upon others. So that's one reason, and the other reason is, of course, then subsequently to protect those who are being preyed upon, but particularly those who have a strong bond or connection to God. That's the idea. And all the avatars do that in one way, shape, or form when they come down. And the other thing with yoga philosophy and the Vedas is that all of the avatars are predicted in the Vedas. Because nowadays, in the New Age movement, I met a lot of avatars. I've heard of a lot of avatars.
And they claim to be.
They claim to be avatars. So I just say, yeah, no problem. Which book can I read about your prediction that predicted you to appear? Just tell me where I can find it.
And that's just,
yeah, nice. Yeah, exactly. Okay. And then I have the mantra here that we're going to use also with this. So I'm going to read you the story. Now, when Krishna... Well, I'll just read it and then I'll explain it as we go. While engaged with the Brahmins, or the priests, the priestly class, who were too involved in the performance of Vedic sacrifices, Krishna and his brother Balaram also saw that the cowherd men were preparing a similar sacrifice in order to pacify Indra, the king of heaven, who's responsible for supplying water. So Krishna was living with farmers, but cow protectors, and more about looking after the cows. So nowadays we call it dairy farmers. And also some agriculture went on there, but this particular village was Vrindavan, was for cow protection. That's what they did. So his foster father there was Nanda, and his mother was Yashoda, but they were his foster parents. His actual parents were princes, kings, princes, princess. So they were actually, you know, leaders and of the warrior class or the protective class. But I won't get into all that right now. So they were going to have a sacrifice to pacify Indra, who is the king of the gods, the king of the celestials, the higher regions. This was commonly done. Now, in our world here in the West, we don't really worship demigods or higher celestial beings. We might pay some homage to the saints. But this is very common in India. They would do sacrifices and offerings for the celestials or the gods, the devas, who handle universal affairs in order to pacify them. Now, this was in the fall, in the autumn, when the harvest was in. So it's also connected to that. You know, so now we've got our harvest, etc. Now we give thanks and we do this sacrifice. As stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, a devotee of Krishna, or devotee of God, has strong and firm faith in the understanding that if he simply is engaged in the worship of God and God's transcendental loving service, then he is freed from all other obligations. So we have certain obligations that are upon us, and expectations from people, relatives, different dharmas or duties. So here they're saying that if you worship God and you have a relationship with God, everything is kind of taken care of under that banner. Okay. A pure devotee of Krishna or God does not have to perform any of the ritualistic functions talked about in the Vedas, nor is he required to worship any demigod. Being a devotee of Krishna or God, one is understood to have performed all kinds of Vedic rituals and all kinds of worship to the demigods in past lives. Just by performing the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies or worshipping the demigods, one does not necessarily develop devotion for God. But one who is engaged fully in the service of the Lord has already finished or accomplished all the Vedic conjunctions. So what do they mean, a pure devotee of God? What do they mean by that? Simply. What?
They do everything for God.
Right. Pure, people would think pure means when you're absolutely, completely spiritualized and pure. Yeah, but that's not what this means. This means when your devotion isn't tinged with self-interest. When what you're doing from your heart out of love for God, rather than, okay, I'll do this for you, but, you know, what am I going to get? You know, what's the exchange here? So that is not pure. You know, can you do that with God as well? Yeah, you can. But that's not the definition of pure devotion.
It's unconditional.
Unconditional as opposed to conditional. Correct. So Krishna ordered a stop to all such activities by the people of Vrindavan, for he wanted to firmly establish exclusive devotional service during his presence in Vrindavan. He knew that the cowherd men were preparing for the Indra sacrifice because he is the omniscient personality of Godhead. But as a matter of etiquette, he began to inquire with great honor and submission from the elder personalities like Nanda, his father, and others. Now, what's funny about this is that he's 7 years old at the time, Krishna. But Krishna wouldn't talk like your average seven-year-old. He would just carry on as if he's 107 years old. And please explain to me, you know, what is the real purpose behind this, you know? And the other thing is that they didn't know he's God. They knew he was special, different. But they, according to his yoga maya, his internal potency, he cast a net of illusion over them. So they wouldn't see the fact that he's God. But he was just one of the members of the community. And for Nanda and Yashoda, he was the son, the foster child, whom they loved. Everybody loved Krishna. And so the real knowledge of who he was, his identity, had been taken from them. So he says, my dear father, what is this arrangement going on for a great sacrifice? What is the result of such sacrifice? For whom is it meant? How will it be performed? Will you kindly let me know? I'm very anxious to know this procedure. So please explain to me the purpose of this sacrifice. Upon this inquiry, his father, Nanda Maharaj. Maharaj means? King. So he was the king of the community. He remained silent, thinking that this young boy won't be able to understand the intricacies of performing the sacrifice and the ritual. Krishna, however, persisted, and he said, my dear father, for those who are liberal and saintly, there's no secrecy. They do not think anyone to be a friend or an enemy because they are always open to everyone. No friends and enemies. Because there's no hidden agenda. And even for those who are not so liberal, nothing should be secret for the family members and friends, although secrecy may be maintained for persons who are inimical, opposed, envious, enemies, enmity. Therefore, you cannot keep any secrets from me. Yeah, in more ways than one. So, if Krishna's in the heart of every living being, though, he wouldn't be able to keep any secrets. All persons are engaged in fruitive activities. So, activities for which they expect a result. And with that result, you get what?
Karma.
You get a karmic result. For every action, there is a reaction. Some know what these activities are, and they know the result. And some execute activities without knowing the purpose or the result. A person who acts with full knowledge gets the full result. One who acts without knowledge does not get such a perfect result. In fact, sometimes he might get the opposite result. Therefore, please let me know the purpose of the sacrifice which you are going to perform. Is it according to Vedic injunction? Or is it simply a popular ceremony? Because ceremonies are done according to custom and community. Kindly let me know in detail about the sacrifice. On hearing this inquiry from Krishna, Maharaj Nanda replied, "My dear boy, this ceremonial performance is more or less traditional. Because rainfall is due to the mercy of King Indra. Indra is the king of the gods, but he's in charge of rain. And due to the mercy of King Indra, and the clouds are his representatives. And because water is so important for our living, we must show some gratitude to the controller of this rainfall. Maharaj Indra, we are arranging, therefore, to pacify Indra because he has very kindly sent us clouds to pour down sufficient quantity of rain for successful agricultural activities." So there must be a lot of people worshipping God, what to speak of Indra, in Ireland, because it rains here fairly regularly, and drought is the last thing that we are concerned about here. And they don't call it the Emerald Isle for nothing. Water is very important. Without rainfall, we cannot farm or produce grains. We cannot live if there is no rainfall. It is necessary for successful religious ceremonies, economic development, and ultimately liberation. Liberation from what?
Samsara.
Repeated birth and death. Therefore, we should not give up the traditional ceremonial functions. If one gives it up, being influenced by lust, greed, fear, then it does not look very good for him. I lived in America most of my life, and for the past 7-8 years, there's been drought in California, in Colorado, Arizona, Nevada, several of those states around there. There's not enough water. And the reservoir, the water supply, which I think is in Lake Mead, if I'm not mistaken, has dwindled dramatically in the last several years. So this is a problem that is going to reach a critical stage in the not too distant future. The other day I was reading that about Ireland, that people are now accosting people on the street and stealing food? Remember I read you that? That was in Ireland?
Yeah, it's in the States.
It was in the States, yeah.
Theft is up, but people are robbing food.
But they're robbing food. You know? Okay. Yes, Monsanto will save the day. They'll feed us all by a GMO intravenous drip, I'm sure. They're good people. After hearing this, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the presence of his father and all the coward men of Vrindavan, spoke in such a way as to make the heavenly king Indra very angry. He suggested that they forego the sacrifice. His reasons for discouraging the sacrifice performed to please Indra were twofold. First, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, there is no need to worship the demigods. This is not so much an issue here, as I say, in the West. But in India, it's still very common to worship the demigods. There's no need to worship the demigods for any material advancement. All results derived from worshiping the demigods are simply temporary, and only those who are less intelligent are interested in temporary results. Secondly, whatever temporary result one derives from worshiping the demigods is actually granted by the permission of God. It is clearly stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Mayaiva Vihitan Hitan. Whatever benefit is supposed to be derived from the gods is actually bestowed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And without the permission of God, one cannot bestow any benefit upon others. So everything comes from God. That's really what they're saying there. But sometimes the celestials or the gods become puffed up by the influence of material nature, thinking themselves as all in all. So they too can fall under the influence of the ego, and people in positions of power and authority sometimes become seduced by their position and authority and begin to think themselves rather important, even up in the higher regions. The same is there. Okay. They try to forget the supremacy of God. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is clearly stated that in this instance, Krishna wanted to make Indra angry. Krishna's advent was especially meant for the annihilation of the demons and the protection of the devotees. King Indra was certainly a devotee and not a demon. But because he was puffed up or arrogant, Krishna wanted to teach him a lesson. He first tried to make Indra angry by stopping the Indra Puja, or the offering to Indra, which was arranged by the cowherd men in Vrindavan. Maharaj Nanda and the other elderly members argued that without satisfying the predominating God, one cannot derive any good result simply by material activities. This is actually a fact. For example, it is sometimes found that in spite of first-class medical help and treatment by a first-class physician, a diseased person dies. It is concluded, therefore, that the first-class medical treatment or the attempts of a first-class physician are not in themselves the cause for curing the patient. Similarly, there must be the hand of God in the mix as well. Similarly, a father's and mother's taking care of their children is not the cause of the children's comfort. Sometimes it is found that in spite of all care by the parents, the children go bad or succumb to death. So, it's karma. Yeah. So you have to reach beyond the obvious material activity and go higher. Therefore, material causes are not sufficient for results. Material causes is not enough. There must be the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nanda Maharaj, therefore, advocated that in order to get good results for agricultural activities, they must satisfy Indra, the superintending deity of the rain supply. Krishna nullified this argument, saying that the demigods give results only to persons who have executed their prescribed duties. The demigods cannot give any good results to the person who has not executed the prescribed duties. Therefore, demigods are dependent on the execution of duties and are not absolute in awarding good results to anyone. So it's like if you plant the crops in the field, then, you know, then they should grow. My dear father, there is no need to worship the demigod Indra, Krishna said. Everyone has to achieve the result of his own work. We can actually see that one becomes busy according to the natural tendency of his work. And according to that tendency, all living entities, either human beings or demigods, achieve their respective results. All living entities achieve higher or lower bodies and create enemies, friends, or neutral parties only because of their different kinds of work. Okay. No. Yeah, that's what I'm just thinking. You know, it goes on and on here. Okay, well, what happens is Krishna convinces the cowherd men not to perform the sacrifice for Indra, and to take all the paraphernalia, all the things that they're using for the sacrifice, including all the charity that they intend to give to the Brahmins or the priests, and use it to perform a sacrifice to God and to Govardhan Hill. Govardhan Hill was a huge hill in Vrindavan, still there, and that hill is where the cows would graze, so it was a special place. So he also said to worship Govardhan Hill, because the cows, according to yoga philosophy and Vedic knowledge, are sacred. Why are the cows considered to be sacred? Because they are a symbol of the mother. Why are they a symbol of the mother? Because of the milk and everything that's made from milk. So they are symbolically very important, and they must be protected and honored and regarded. It's also a fact which most people don't know, that cow stool and cow urine are antiseptic, and they actually cure many diseases. The use of cow stool and cow urine cures something like 96 diseases because of its purity. Now, most people in the West wouldn't be putting that on themselves, but it also shows you the status or the position of the cow. And so a cow is a symbol of motherhood. So worshiping the cow, honoring the cow, and Govardhan Hill and God, that's, he steered them in that direction. And he wanted to teach Indra a lesson. He was puffed up because of his status. So that's what he did. They did the sacrifice. Indra found out about it. Indra wondered who this little upstart was, this little 7-year-old upstart that had changed the protocol, but the tradition that's been going on for how many years, and now he's not being worshipped. So he got very, very angry. And he called forth his, Samvartaka cloud, which is the cloud used in the destruction of the material creation. It's explained in the Vedas that the creation is created and then annihilated. In other words, it's like you breathe out. Here's the creation. Vishnu, God, breathes out. We have creation. He inhales. It all goes back into his being. So it's in and out, in and out. It's on, it's off. It's on, it's off. It's manifest, it's unmanifest. Same idea.
It's like the universe is expanding and then reaching points.
Correct. Exactly. And it's explained that when it's time for the destruction of the universe, there's minor ones and there's major ones of varying durations. So when it's time for the destruction or the wrapping up of the material creation, the first thing, and just take your cue from this, when people go around with placards telling you that the end is near and it's all going to be over pretty soon, according to biblical prophecy, etc. What it says. Who's they? Oh well, they have lots of dates. They have lots of the dates come and go and come and go and come and go.
All right, okay.
Yeah, well, let's see. Yeah. So, what it says in terms of the wrapping up of the creation is, the first thing that happens is there's a drought. And it lasts for 100 years. And then, no, it's not here. Then that is followed by fire that comes up from the lower, the Patala Loka, and lower planets, comes up and fire burns everything for 100 years. Then come the rains, and the torrential rains with drops that are 1 or 2 meters in size, that lasts for 100 years. So when you start seeing those things, starting with the drought that doesn't end, then that's the cue, you know, perhaps. But anyway, that's not going to happen for a long time. So Indra sends this cloud that is used to wrap up the creation. That's the one he sends. And the winds are gale force winds, and there's torrential rain, and there's flooding, and this and that. So what Krishna does is he lifts Govardhan Hill. There's one of the depictions there. But in this depiction on the wall, he lifts with his whole palm of the hand, but he doesn't do that. He does it with the little finger of his left hand. So that's not even his strong hand. In other words, it's his, you know, his left hand. And all of the residents of Vrindavan come under the umbrella, which is now Govardhan Hill becomes the umbrella, and all of the animals and the cows, and they bring everything underneath, and Krishna holds it there for how long? No. 7 days. 7 days for a week. And everybody is protected from this onslaught. And finally, you know, Indra wonders, well, wait a second, who is this guy? This 7-year-old upstart who has nixed my sacrifice, and now he's holding up the hill and he's saving everybody from my deluge. So it finally dawns on him that he's been outflanked and outperformed by the little blue coward boy. And at that time he comes and he throws himself at Krishna's feet and asks for forgiveness, knowing that, you know, Krishna then allows him to see who he is, because this Maya that we all are subject to, the first level of this Maya is thinking that this is it, this is me here, and everything about this is just wonderful, except it grows old and dies. Apart from that, it's great. Yeah. So we fall under the spell of Maya in so many different ways, and there's varying degrees of this maya or illusion. So, you know, he allows Indra to have a little bit of insight as to who he is, and that carves a few layers off Indra's ego, which was the intention. From that time forward, 5,000 years ago in Vrindavan, Govardhan Puja, or the worship of the Govardhan Hill, which saved the cowherd community, has been done, has been performed. And what they oftentimes do is cook mountains of food and offer that to Govardhan Hill, offer it to Krishna, offer it to God. And they cook like hills of rice and different preparations. So that's Saturday. So if you want to make a little offering on Saturday to God and cook up some rice and make a little hill out of it, so that you might want to do that. So Indra learned his lesson, and Krishna did many, many wonderful superhuman feats when he was on the planet. We've talked many times about the different levels of God realization, energy, diversity, personality. Many people think they are God, and they merge into God when they leave their body, become liberated. And that is a legitimate level of God realization. Yeah. But that's not the highest level of realization.
It's a harder way.
It's a harder way of doing it. So, I forgot what I was going to say. One learns that to surrender to God is a higher level of consciousness, and to work in harmony with God, and offer whatever it is you do for the satisfaction of God is a higher level of consciousness. So that's what that was the whole point of that exercise in Vrindavan and Govardhan Hill. So any questions about that? Comments?
My comments were like, sometimes, you know, some Muslim people or some other religion people ask, they say, well, Hindus have loads of God and goddess and this, and I just tell them, no, just like a demigods, like a Muslim has imams, like a 52 million imams in there, according to Quran, but there's only one Allah. Right? And
yeah.
Same as like in Christian, they have lots of archangels and angels.
Yeah.
But there's one Jesus. So that's for the Hindus as well. But we don't worship them. Like, yes, of course, they are, you know, and they're higher hierarchy. But then again, we just have all we dedicated to Lord Vishnu. Krishna. And Lord Krishna is, avatar of Lord Vishnu.
Yeah, but they're also... For a lot of Hindus, they think all of those are the same.
Yeah,
and you could worship anyone, it's the same situation, but that's not the case.
Yeah.
So that's how I would discriminate from that. But ultimately, there's one God. And that's true in any religion. But there's many manifestations of the energies of God. And that's the way to look at it. Just like you have, again, you would take the example of a company like we did last time. And a company has its head, an executive that runs the whole thing. But then the company has different departments. and the departments have different activities, and they have managers, and they do different things or provide services or products. These are the different energies, and there are different people that are in charge of that who are not the chief executive but are managers of varying degrees on differing levels. It's the same idea. So
the same thing for the cow. They say they worship the cow. It's not a worship the cow. They ask them, okay, this is just like a mother like an animal, because like let's give the milk, and then also for the milk you can make a yogurt, and yogurt you can also make butter from the milk, and for butter you can make purified ghee, you can use it as a cooking, which is the one of the best thing for the frying or cooking. And all scientifically and nutritionally it's proven that the ghee is the best thing for cooking, because it doesn't rancid and doesn't lose its chemical bonding as well, or chemical structure with hydrogen, carbon, atoms. Yeah, it's very ghee. But also then you can use ghee as to lighten the lamps as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also used to preserve lots of Ayurvedic formulas. And so is cows, as you mentioned earlier, the urine as well. But then these things day by day it's scientifically proven. So that's why in ancient India they must have said, okay, this is amazing. Even the cow dung, like they used to actually use for fertilizer, but also they used to dry that up and use it as a fuel.
For fire, fuel.
Yeah, yeah. For the fuel. And then after the fuel, the ashes is actually so purified, they used to wash the dishes as well.
Another way.
You can use a lot of things. They said, this is just like this, and we could serve you as a mother and do a lot of things for you. So that's why they call her.
Yeah.
It's a mother like, but not a mother.
It's a symbol of the divine feminine. What we see in this day and age, this is Kali Yuga, this is the Iron Age, the age of hypocrisy in terms of the seasons of the universal time measurement. We see the degradation of the female principle. That's what we see. We see the degradation, the dishonoring, the destruction, the exploitation of the female principle. We see it with the earth. The earth is feminine, Mother Earth. And what do we do to Mother Earth? We rip it. We pollute it. We poison it. Yeah, we take out all the oil, we take out the blood, and we use it for our own uses, whatever it might be, without
mining.
Yeah, without thinking of conservation, etc.
Even the Indians, they regard the coal as the liver of the earth.
That's the same thing that is like about the. The blood, of, like the way they take like all the petroleum, we call the oil and crude oil.
Yeah, it's the blood.
Wow. And the funny thing is that I was talking to somebody, it says like it's bleeding the way it's bleeding in Mexico, Gulf of Mexico, it was just like bleeding.
Yeah.
Because when you drill oil, it doesn't stop. You can't, that's why you can't stop
like
it.
Like an artery.
Yeah, it just keeps going. Yeah.
And then the water, of course, is a feminine symbol. So they're polluting, the water has been polluted countless times in all sorts of places. So that's also the feminine. And then the way women have been treated and disregarded and dishonored. And now now there's a big backlash, and which was the feminist movement. Not surprising. Yeah, and you've got a divorce rate now about 50% in the Western countries. So these are all examples of the feminine not being honored. And now what you see on TV, when you see these commercials, they empower the women, or the women have the edge And they always look at the husband as if he's some sort of idiot. And why doesn't he cough on? Why doesn't he understand? Which is now the shoe is on the other foot. It goes from this extreme to this extreme.
And they're drinking a lot. They're drinking too much alcohol. They wanted to go
and... Yes. And now, porn, which is something that, you know, you'd have to go to a special theater to enjoy. It's readily available on the internet everywhere, which is also a symptom of the same thing. So that's why these symbols of motherhood, of the feminine, of the divine feminine, are very important. You can't minimize it and say, well, this doesn't matter. No, it matters. So now what you have is mass wholesale animal slaughter. And innocent animals are being killed off in the name of eating. You know, the need to eat protein, which is
rubbish.
And again, that is bringing a tremendous negative reaction. Yeah. So yeah, that's what we have. So let us. With thinking of Krishna's superhuman feat of lifting Govardhan Hill, we're going to do a mantra today. And these are my words, I put it in parentheses. Krishna mantra, to accomplish the impossible. So this mantra is Om Shri Giridharaye Namaha. 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 Okay. So I offer my respects or my obeisances unto Shri Krishna, the lifter of Govardhan Hill. Chanting this mantra enables you to achieve the impossible. By aligning yourself with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the lifter of the huge rocky hill of Govardhan, you can surmount all obstacles. Whatever you are attempting to accomplish materially or spiritually, no matter the odds, can be achieved by calling on Krishna with this mantra. Krishna lifted the hill of Govardhan with the little finger of his left hand in order to protect the residents of Vrindavan. He held it for 7 days in a relentless storm, whipped by gale force winds and pounded by torrential rain. Simply to teach Indra, the king of the celestials, a lesson in humility, Krishna did the impossible. 5,000 years later, people are still honoring Krishna's superhuman feat. So I invite you to use this mantra, to practice it, and use it in your meditation. Test it out. See if you can accomplish something that seems impossible or that cannot be accomplished, that takes tremendous energy. And see if that'll work. Now you can chant that a few times in a day, or you can chant a whole round on the Japa Mala, 108, up to you. Or you can chant it driving down the street. Whatever you like. All right. So maybe we should do some meditation. Breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply, deeply relax, and let go. Allow the stress, the tension, the fear, the apprehension to drain from your body totally, completely. Relax, breathe, and let go. High above, envision a beautiful beam of radiant pearl white light coming down, down, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms, and legs, or base chakra, and down into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. See and feel yourself by means of this light, connected to the heavens above and grounded in the earth below. And breathe, relax, and let go. All right. You're in a beautiful place. It's not earth. It is a divine place, a spiritual place, or a heavenly place, a heavenly scene. It is not material. And whatever problem you have in your life right now, or challenge, or difficulty, let that come into your mind. One situation, not several, just one. Now somebody is there, appears there. Maybe it's God, maybe it's a higher being. Maybe it's one of your guides. I don't know. Somebody appears there to help you. Offer your respects. Greet this person. What do they say as you greet them? How do they greet you? Now present your circumstance, your problem, or your challenge. What should I do? What can be done? What is the best course of action? If that's not clear, then what is the next step? What is the next thing I need to do? Present that to this person. What are you told to do, or what is indicated? What is shown? What are you told to do? Okay, continue with your meditation until it has run its course and you are complete and you've come to a resolution. When you're finished, thank the person who has appeared in front of you. Bid them farewell and slowly return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. Okay. Anybody want to share their adventure?
Yeah, just for see. I just had a sense of something separating from all I heard was the voice around me.
So you didn't present the situation necessarily, or you did? Surrender to divine will.
That's very resonant. But I have a scene, and I say, you say, pick the person, I say, I have to be Lord Krishna. And then,
No, you're not supposed to pick the person. You're supposed to let the person appear.
It's just come up, and then after I had notes, right? It's just come up, and I say, okay, then. And I say, my God, what are you going to ask? I say, I want it. No. You say, no, you want. I say, no. I say,
yeah, you can't do 10.
You know, I say, I have. No, I say, just go. I surrender myself. That's it. I say, okay, that's it. And guide me. That's it. I say.
And?
It's okay then. That's it. Just put his hand on my. Just smile. But then once you say that, and I had no any desire and nothing else, just because I felt so safe.
Right.
Everything gonna be good anyway. Because if you say it, then that's it, all the way through.
Because your situation, your concern looms large. and it seems so big and so important and so overwhelming until you shift your perspective and see it from the roof, so to speak, or see it from a much higher place, and then it seems, sometimes it just disappears completely. It's just not that important in the scheme of things.
That's exactly happened when I say it's under or COVID, then I have no desire. Mm-hmm. I felt so safe, and they say, okay.
You can't even think about it.
Yeah.
You try to.
And then you say, oh, right, okay, that's it. You know, just like you hug when your mother hugs you, and then you say, you feel safe, and that's it.
Okay, no one else? Okay. Then we'll just do a little bit of chanting, and we'll call it an evening.